Warning: The Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation, home of borders, language, culture. And here he is, Michael Savage.
The Pope, being named Man of the Year, has spoken to the world eloquently about this whole issue of the vulnerable. And so I'd ask this, Mr. Woodall, in the Rules Committee, let's put the Van Hollen, Lee, and Levin Amendment on the floor tonight, tomorrow. Call us back, Mr. Boehner. Call us back, Mr. Boehner. Let us vote to provide for unemployment insurance for working men
and women.
Time
has expired.
So that faces across America will not have the tear of desperation.
Gentlewoman's time has expired.
The deal is good.
That's all, folks. Welcome to the Savage Nation. That, of course, was the inimitable Sheila Jackson Lee, who in my time would have, well, let's leave it at that. It's a family program. She wants unemployment benefits extended for working men and women, which is very interesting when you consider that we were just told the job numbers are so great and unemployment is down under the great Obama, who's just back from South Africa, where a fake sign language interpreter who has said, "I've been in violence in the past, but I saw angels that day." Turns out that the signer at the event was a faker, Thamsankwa Janchi, I guess how you say it. The man accused of faking sign interpretation next to world leaders. Remember what I'm talking about. He stood next to Obama and other world leaders for 4 hours. He has violent episodes. We are spied on by the NSA, and they didn't know he was a schizophrenic lunatic. How's that, folks? How about playing Looney Tunes the next time you hear about national security? The man is insulting all those with true mental illness. He's insulting South Africa. He's insulting the memory of Mandela. What an excuse. Unbelievable, huh? Anyway, here we are in the Savage Nation. If you think that's the only sound that's worthy of the Looney Tunes soundbite, you're mistaken. What would the night be if we didn't have Nancy Pelosi with the Looney Tunes soundbite in clip one? Let's hear it.
I think it really captured the moment, wouldn't you think?
Oh, I'm not criticizing. It seems to sum up what you think of this legislation.
Well, it's not just the legislation. It's the whole process and the fact that we don't have unemployment insurance and those kinds of things. But at the end of the day, we need to have a budget. So what we decided was that our approach would be to...
You're not going to say it to me. Embrace the suck. Go ahead.
Only in America, only in America could we be ruled by such people. Well, we have one more that's worthy of a Looney Tunes background, and I don't know which one it was. We have Sheila Jackson Lee, and I don't want people to think I'm a sexist. Oh, the translator, he's a male, so I can't be accused of sexism. Here is the fake sign language interpreter who said, "I've been violent in the past, but I saw angels that day," in clip number five.
The problem, I don't know the attack of this problem, how will it come? Sometimes I will react violent on that place. Sometimes I will see like things like chasing me. And then, you know, I was very, very, very difficult position.
Man with a history of violence that bursts out and beats people up, violent schizophrenic, fakes it as a sign language interpreter. The company that had hired him is gone. They don't know where they are. And he was next to President Obama. He said that he didn't, they said he was just flapping his arms and speaking gibberish with his signs. Well, I thought that's what Obama does on a daily basis. I don't know. I mean, is that what he does? Flaps his arms and basically speaks gibberish? They said the translation company offered substandard services, and the rate they paid the translator, $77 a day, is far below the usual rate of up to $164 an hour. I would say that we should hire him to be the president, frankly. It would be a bargain. He couldn't do any worse than this administration is doing. You know what I'm saying? Flapping your arms and speaking gibberish? Would that be much different than what Obama does on a daily basis? Don't call me. Don't call me. You ready for the real show? You see, I've been warming you up. I told you that when... I was a mere anthropologist. I shouldn't say mere anthropologist. The years I was a medical anthropologist. I lived in these South Pacific Islands, and I met a lot of interesting professor types. And a lot of them would go way back to the colonial days of doing medicine in the islands. And they told me that the way the indigenous folks that would be native to you, you can't say native anymore, that's considered a slur. The indigenous folks of the islands would... get a turkey drunk prior to slaughtering the turkey for cooking. Because if you get, they give them gin, in other words. All of the colonial Brits used to drink gin and tonics. So my old friend Dr. D told me, he said they get the turkeys drunk prior to slaughtering them, and the meat was a lot more tender. You get it? Well, by playing these sound bites for you, I gave you the equivalent of the turkey treatment just now. So my little turkey stepped forward for the real horrendous news of the day. I don't even know how to tell you these stories. It's going to get so bad tonight when you hear what's going on in your world that you're going to actually probably need a little gin before the show is over, is what I'm getting at. If you haven't had one, I suggest you reach into the whiskey cabinet to get one now. Let us begin with the Pope. Pope Francis calls for spreading the wealth in his first peace message as Pope. He did it again. Now, as you know, Limbaugh took credit for that, even though I did it on a Tuesday night and he did it Wednesday morning. I must tell you, I was the first one to point out to you that it's liberation theology. This is the first Pope in 1,400 years who was non-European. This is all planned. This is a new world, let us say, USSR type emerging. Instead of the United Soviet States, Soviet Republic, the USSR, it's a new world order on the order of the old Soviet Union that is emerging in the world. It's a terrifying thing to live through in my time. So Pope Francis attacks mega salaries and big bonuses Thursday, saying in the first peace message of his pontificate that they are symptoms of an economy based on greed and inequality. In his message for the Roman Catholic Church's World Day of Peace, marked by the church around the world on Jan 1, he called for more sharing of wealth among people and nations to narrow the gap between the rich and the poor. The Pope said the grave financial and economic crisis of the present time have pushed man to seek satisfaction, happiness, and security in consumption and earnings out of all proportion to the principles of a sound economy. He's an economist now. A former bouncer is now an economist. The Pope went on. He said the succession of economic crises should lead to a timely rethinking of our models of economic development and to a change in lifestyles. That's what Karl Marx said, by the way, to a rethinking of our models of economic development. That's all Karl Marx wanted, was a rethinking of our models of economic development. And what that led to in the ex-Russia became the Soviet Union was there was one salami hanging in the store and there was a line around the block to buy the one salami. You see, the poor people don't know how to invest money to bid on a salami or many salamis. They line up to get a free salami. Francis, who was named Time Magazine's a Person of the Year, that means nothing. Time Magazine was sold for a dollar, or was it $3, has urged his own church to be more fair, frugal, and less pompous, and to be closer to the poor and suffering, and so forth and so on. Now, to his credit, the new Pope's style is characterized by frugality. He shunned the spacious papal apartment in the Vatican's apostolic palace to live in a small suite in a Vatican guest house. And he prefers a Ford Focus to the traditional Pope's Mercedes. Well, I myself prefer a Mercedes to a Ford Focus, and I can guarantee you his guest house quarters are better than mine, but nevertheless, he is the Pope after all. He's entitled to it. But let me ask you something. Where do you think the so-called treasures of the Vatican came from? Were they donated by the poor of Europe at that time, or was it as a result of the rich who commissioned the art? Huh? Any questions on that? Do you understand what I just said to you? Let me ask you a question on the Savage Nation. Let's say your corporation were to give you a big bonus at the end of the year. What would you do with it? Would you run to the nearest Catholic church and hand it over to the priest and tell him to dispense it to the poor? Or would you say, you know what, I have a family member who is not doing well, I need to help her or him? Would you perhaps set your bonus aside for your children's future college tuition? Do you understand that corporations hand out big bonuses to people who bring in big business? Do you understand that? Not all employees are equal, but those who bring big profits to the corporation deserve their big bonuses. Do you get that? I'm very admirable. I mean, the Pope's statements are admirable. But it's something that does not apply in real life. How about throwing stones from a glass house? Who built that gold palace called the Vatican? It wasn't the poor. You get the picture? Now, you have to understand what I just said to you. I am not attacking the Catholic Church nor Catholicism. I will say that again. The Catholic Church is a fabulous institution, and Catholicism is a great religion. But as someone wrote, the good news is this. As a faithful Catholic, he is free to ignore his comments on matters unrelated to faith and morals. And in this case, I believe the Pope is wrong. Do you believe the Pope is right or wrong? 855-407-282. 855-400-SAVAGE. The most skeptical show in radio. Mark your calendars. Mark your calendars. January 1st, this show moves to a new location. Same station that I'm on. Probably the same station I'm on. But a new time. On the East Coast, 3 to 6 drive time. On the West Coast, 12 to 3 noontime. And I should tell you that I'm going to be the last man standing in radio. I knew this would happen when I began 20 years ago this March. I predicted I'd be in the winner's circle. I didn't know it would be this big a win. But I am at the winner's table right now. Hannity lost 52 cumulus stations. No matter what Hey Abbott says, no matter what Hey Abbott says, he's not doing better. He's doing worse. Hannity lost 52 cumulus stations. I got them all. It's that simple. And they're the best stations in America. He has substituted a few with a few decent stations, but by and large, he's been knocked down to B-level stations. Yes, he'll have more stations than I will, but it's not all about size. I mean, size may matter to some, and the number of stations may matter to some, but at the end of the day, that's not what really matters. It's the quality, not the size. Ask any... Wait, it's a family show. 855-407-285. So we have two stories. We have the sign language interpreter, who's a faker, a lunatic, subject to violence, who admitted that he's a schizophrenic, who said he just flapped his arms around and spoke gibberish with his signs, which are not real deaf signs. He was not vetted by the Secret Service. The NSA didn't find that out. They were busy seeing if you're a conservative and what your internet surfing habits may be. That's the kind of country we're living in today. The Stasi is upside down. The Stasi is upside down. Oh, I don't mind having a spy agency. We need it with all of our friendly Muslims in this country. We absolutely need a Stasi in America. Only, how come they couldn't catch the Sarnoff brothers before the Boston bombing? I guess they were too busy looking at conservatives who saluted the flag. Or perhaps they were looking at Navy SEALs who were concerned about that helicopter crash. Maybe that's part of their problem. 855-400-7282 is the phone number. It is now. Do you know what time? Do you have any idea what time it is? Do you realize it's already 18 minutes after the hour? Do you have any idea what that means? I don't. That's why I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now. 855-400-SAVAGE. 855-400-7282. Savage.
We're facing a tsunami of Marxism across the globe, and it seems to be orchestrated by some sinister forces. We have in the White House Barack Obama, who sat in a church that espoused liberation theology for many years, for decades, frankly. And frankly, whether he dropped that because now he's drunk with power is a real question. We don't know. I think the left thinks so. Then we have de Blasio, who saluted the Sandinistas in his run for the mayorship of New York, using class warfare as his weapon to become mayor of New York. Then we have a new pope, the first non-European in 1,400 years, who was espousing fundamentalist liberation theology. And to me, it seems like a worldwide plot, if you want to put it that way. And I don't think I'm wrong to talk about it. I can't sit on the sidelines. I mean, if it was what if it was an imam getting up there? Well, let's start at the head of the Muslim world, if there is such an individual, or one of the top individuals in the Muslim church who suddenly came out and said the same things that the Pope said, spread the wealth in his first peace message as head of the Muslim world. Why, you would go crazy. You'd be screaming. You'd be blithering. Blood would be running out of your ears. But because the Pope says it, you say that he should be hands-off? What if a rabbi said it? What if a rabbi came out and called for spreading the wealth in a major message? You'd be screaming anti-Semitism. You'd say he's a Jewish communist, wouldn't you? But if the Pope says it, the Pope is a man, for God's sakes. A very important man. A man who had once been a bouncer, no less. I don't hold that against him. But I wonder when he was a bouncer if he would have had these ideas. I don't know. I really don't know. And don't think I'm such a, you know, a lunkhead and a hard-hearted guy, you know. I understand all the cardinal virtues, and I also know the theological virtues. Believe me, I know them. It's not like it's new to me. The three theological virtues, believe me, I still remember hope, charity, faith, hope, and charity. I know the three virtues. Do I live them as best I can? They're simple. I mean, faith, hope, and charity are the three theological virtues. I'd rather that the Pope spread the message of the three theological virtues rather than the virtues of Marx, Lenin, and Vladimir Putin. 855-400-7282. Let's take a few callers. Tony at Fort Myers, Florida, WFTL, great affiliate, the land of the seltzer bottle. Tony, how are you?
Hey, Michael, thank you. Listen, I would like to know, as a Catholic, why isn't this Pope talking about the Catholics and the Christians that are being slaughtered in Africa, North Africa, the Middle East, and as of recently, North Korea, for owning Bibles? That's what.
How about in Syria? How about the Christians being killed in Syria? I would think that's the head of the Catholic Church's job, is to protect his people.
Exactly. Why?
What's he going on against the rich? The rich put him in business.
I just want to hear him talk about that. I think that is what he is there for, not to talk about how the evil Catholic...
So, Tony, I am not Catholic. You know that. Do you find it offensive that I'm stating these opinions of his liberation theology?
Michael, as a Catholic, I'm grateful that you have the strength and the courage to get out there and say what a lot of Catholics are. I say this to my Catholic friends, and it's as if I'm you know, converting to, you know, Islam. I mean,
But Tony, do you know that the Catholic Church traditionally hated socialism and communism and fought it, and many priests were killed by the communists? The very principles that the Pope is preaching are anathema to most Catholics, and to Catholic teaching, by the way. It's a new theology that he's preaching. It's a pseudo-Marxist theology that has welded itself onto the Catholic Church. Liberation theology is a political movement in Roman Catholic theology which has interpreted the teachings of Jesus in relation to a liberation from so-called unjust economic, political, or social conditions. Well, we're all for liberating the poor from unjust economic, political, or social conditions. But that doesn't mean attack the middle class in America, or attack the man who just got a big bonus on Wall Street and vilify them. It will start riots.
Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-7282.
Savage. It is the Savage Nation, and there's a lot of stories, okay, and I've touched on some of them. Francis, the Pope, calls for spreading the wealth in his first peace message as Pope. You may say, that's not a bad idea. Hey, we just want these big salaries and big bonuses to be spread amongst the people. Well, okay. So if you were given a bonus as a worker, what would you do with it? Take it to the church box, poor box? Or put it aside for your future, for your children's education? Do you have any idea what the man is saying? Do you have any idea what a threat this is to our civilization in terms of our economic civilization? It's the antithesis of our economic civilization. Now, one other thing about liberation theology, before I take your calls here on this Savage Nation, is that the influence of such liberation theology, which is not new to the Catholic Church, it's recent but not new. The term was coined in 1971 by the Peruvian priest Gustavo Gutierrez, who wrote a book called The Theology of Liberation. And this was fundamentally Marxism, Christianity through the eyes of the poor. Detractors have called it Christianized Marxism, which is what it is in my mind. What happened is the influence of such liberation theology diminished after the proponents had been accused of using Marxist concepts, and it led to admonishment by the Vatican's Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith in 1984 and 1986. The Vatican went further and criticized certain strains of liberation theology. Why? Because they even identified Catholic Church hierarchy in South America as members of the same privileged class that had long been oppressing indigenous populations since the arrival of Pizarro and onward. So in other words, what? The privileged classes in South America didn't include the head of the churches? Of course it did. Then eventually these liberation theologians turned on them. You understand where this leads to? It leads to the, what did they have in France during the French Revolution? The guillotine? Yeah. Let me tell you something. Once the guillotine starts falling and the heads start rolling, it's very hard to stop the guillotine from falling. And if you study the French Revolution, many of the most ardent proponents of using the guillotine on the rich wound up with their heads under the sword because it's a thirsty instrument, the guillotine. It thirsts for man's blood. And once it starts, it's very hard to stop. Let's take some callers. WABC John, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hello, Michael. Maybe you're making this a bit too difficult, not difficult, but complicated. But what about the fact that the Pope was in Argentina about the same time that Juan Perón was there? So maybe he is a follower of the Peronista.
You think that this is Peronista rhetoric?
Well, the way that he thinks. In other words, he was a young man when Perón was there. Young.
Well, yes, we had Eva Perón, who's a big hero of the left.
Oh, they sure.
You remember the movie? Wasn't there a movie with Madonna playing Evita? Didn't she play Evita Perón?
Well, there is.
Yes. So the left has always loved the communist rhetoric, but they don't live it, do they?
Well, I mean, the Pope was there when Perón was there. So.
But it makes you wonder, John. Why did the Church select a non-European for the first time in 1,400 years? Who is given towards these leftist sentiments? Why?
I really don't know, sir.
Now, see, this is the question. It's not what the Pope is saying, it's how he's become the Pope. Why? They had other choices. So who is it in the Church that decided to go by the way of liberation theology? And why all of a sudden? That's a thesis for, not for radio, that's a thesis for a PhD candidate or a professor of theology somewhere. Not for me. It's not beyond my pay scale, I mean, but that's just not something I will do right now. By the way, since we're talking about theology for a moment, can I just digress? And I'm going to take, I have some great callers up there, including some of guys I haven't heard from for years. This is a wonderful topic, and you can join the conversation at 855-427-2822. As you can see, I'm bubbling over with enthusiasm because it's a very important issue to me. Yesterday, I took a breather. I needed a day off from radio. I do this every so often. And I said to myself, Michael, you know, you define yourself by what you do on your day off as much as by what you do on your day on. So instead of falling into the normal patterns of what I normally do, which is the ordinary, just to relax, I went to the Palace of the Legion of Honor Museum, not to talk about it on the radio. I said, okay, you enjoy art, you enjoy Rodin, you enjoy some of the paintings. So I went up there, and it's amazingly uplifting, and it lifted me back up to certain levels of my own thinking, my own mind. But I stumbled upon something I had not seen in the museum, and that was this. There's a room I stumbled into that no one goes into of medieval art, 1500s, and there were tapestries, a whole room of great tapestries, which were the signature art of that period. And I looked at it, and I read the little placard next to the tapestries, and it was all religious art, as you well know, in the Middle Ages. And I read that the three theological virtues are faith, hope, and charity. I said, wow. Didn't know that. I mean, I didn't know that they were called the theological virtues. I knew that faith, hope, and charity were virtues, right? But then I read that there are the cardinal virtues. And these are the virtues recognized in the writings of classical antiquity. And, by the way, in Christian tradition. And what are they? Prudence. What's prudence? Justice. We all know what justice is. Temperance or restraint. We kind of know what that is, although we've lost it with this libertine society. And fortitude. Which is something that soldiers know. Forbearance, endurance, ability to confront fear, uncertainty, and intimidation. And those are the cardinal virtues, right? And yet, we seem to be living in a time where people not only mock both the theological and cardinal virtues, but embrace the opposites. And I thought, wow, what a world it would be if we could have the theological virtues taught again in the schools. Can you imagine? At a time when judges are ripping down crosses from war memorials and 1,000 soldiers don't show up with sidearms and say, go ahead and make my day. They just did that in San Diego today. One low-life, minuscule judge, a stinker with a law degree, who was given a rotten, stinking black robe because he bought the judgeship, in my opinion. One little filth who went to law school says, take down the war memorial. Break the cross off the war memorial. Because a group of atheists said to him, it's a separation of church and state. I'd like to see 1,000 soldiers show up with legal sidearms or rifles or shotguns and say, go ahead and make my day. Break down that cross. I dare you. The day that happens is the day this country will turn around. All you need is 1,000 cops off duty, 1,000 military retired, 1,000 people with guts to stand there and say, I dare you to break down that cross. is what I thought to myself when I read that story. Who the hell is this judge? Who are they? Who are these people? Why are we afraid of them? When did the courts become God? I said to myself before I went on the air. But I didn't intend to say that. But I said it anyway. That's the day America will be turned around. Now let's take your callers. 855-407-28. I got to go to Jimmy on WABC. Jimmy, you will save me from yelling and screaming. Jimmy, go ahead, do it for me.
Yes, in the World Marxist Review, which is a Soviet publication from the 80s, and also American Communist Press, they talk about the changes in the Catholic Church since Vatican II. Basically, they're talking about the communist influence. In fact, that's what they call it, communist influence in the Catholic Church since Vatican II. It's not just the Catholic Church, all religions, including the Muslim religion.
And you ought to throw in including the Jewish religion. Don't give anyone a pass.
Well, I have...
Go to any Reform synagogue, you'll hear the same rubbish.
The Communist Party celebrates Passover. They get greetings from Congressman Charlie the Red Wrangle. It is all the religions. That's the strategies of Antonio Gramsci. Let me read you just one sentence from a liberation theology book. In the developed capitalist countries, Christians ought to undertake political tasks oriented towards world peace and to disarm their immense economic and political apparatus.
So disarm. Well, that's exactly what Karl Marx preached. But now what you're saying is liberation theologians decided to do it through the church itself.
Right. That's the change in the communist movement. This is why I've been saying we didn't win the Cold War. Communism has been unleashed. Criminalism, communism, terrorism, that's all part of the...
And Jimmy, by the way, you've been a caller to my show and others for at least 20 years. I recognize your voice. I was worried that they had finally gotten you with the black hood and the black car. I'm glad to see that the NSA hasn't affected you.
No, they're not going to shut me up. I just had different hours and stuff, but I try to listen to your show as much as I can, and I would love to send you documents. Man, I have...
No, I can't. It's like listener food. Dear Mike, we love you. We baked this cake for you. I can't accept it, Jimmy.
Enemy documents.
Dear Mike, we love you. We made this wine special, Bobby and I did, in our winery. We corked it ourselves, Mike. Please enjoy it with Teddy. So, Jimmy, let me ask you something. Are you going to be able to listen to me at 3 o'clock when I move over to Drive Time in New York?
Whenever I can. Whenever I'm able to have a radio playing, I'll listen.
Will they let you out of the place for the hour?
I'm going to keep listening as much as
all
I
can. Jimmy, you've been around a long time, and everyone knows Jimmy. They know his voice. And Jimmy is absolutely the sharpest guy in America on how the commies have infiltrated everything. You can laugh at it if you want. I mean, it used to be a laughing joke in the 60s. Yeah, the commies this, the commies that. Jimmy, you were right. They're everywhere.
I was right.
That's the truth. They're everywhere, Jimmy. Everywhere you turn.
In elections, the Catholic Church, the Christian...
But, Jimmy, in the 80s, the Catholic Church opposed communism. How many priests were killed by the communists during the Russian Revolution? They burnt churches to the ground. They sacked the churches and they killed priests. How many priests were killed by Adolf Hitler?
Not as many, but he did kill them.
Yes, he did kill them. So any fascism kills priests. Now, the church had long been anti-communist, anti-fascist. How is it now that the church is embracing communism?
Well, this is the liberation theology. The communists have a plan. People don't understand that. You can't kill them. You could hold them back. You could push them down, but they keep fighting. They used to try to destroy the church. Then they figured, don't destroy it. Let's utilize it. When you get a guy wearing a collar or an imam wearing the Muslim getup, when they talk to a large congregation, they have more power than a single communist on a street corner. And this is how we have Muslim terror today. It's incredible. All the religions, and I have the communist publications bragging about training imams and priests and reverends and rabbis. They've been doing it for decades, and nobody's been really paying attention.
Mm-hmm. Well, there we go. I try to listen to the show while I'm speaking with callers like yourself and try to hear it through the ears of the average American harried, busy, you know, worker driving home or whatever they're doing right now. And it sounds bizarre. If they're really not into it the way we are, Jimmy, they probably think we're full of it and we're just nuts, paranoid right-wing guys. They don't really understand what's going on. I know they don't. I know they don't. They think it's laughable. This is something that the goofball fake comedians on television whose scripts are written for them by far brighter men would make a mockery of at night about, oh, those right-wingers think the Pope's a commie. And then they want them to laugh. This is what goes on in our country, Jimmy.
Well, we didn't say the Pope's a commie. We said there's communist influence in the church.
That is correct. And by the way, all of those wonderful comedians who read the material written for them by far smarter men, the Jon Stewarts, etc., have they given up their fortunes to the poor, although they espouse liberation theology in their cryptic humor?
I don't know of any of them. In fact, it's the liberal types who give very little money to...
How about Leon DiCaprio? Leon DiCaprio is a big speaker about the environment. He flies all over the world with let us say, loose women. God bless him. That's what he wants to do. He's not a family man. Flies all over the world, yachting, this and that. How much of his wealth has he given away to the poor? Or that other fraud? The other ones, all of them in the media, all of the Hollywood idiots who talk the talk and don't walk the walk. I haven't seen them give up their fortunes, have you?
No, Al Gore, too. Look at the Clintons. They were given their dirty old socks and underwear and writing it off as a tax loss.
Yeah, don't you love it? Or how about all of these guys with the 400-foot yachts who talk about liberation theology in through their movies? What, I think Harvey Weinstein gave away much this year.
They don't know.
If Harvey Weinstein wanted to give away his dirty underwear, I don't think anybody would want it. But let's let that go. It's a family show. Jimmy, thanks for calling. It is. You know what it is? It's the Savage Nation at 47 minutes after the hour. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now. 855-400-SAVAGE. 855-400-7282. Savage.
I want to show you the propaganda in America today. After Obama disgraced himself and the presidency, and the United States for that matter, by acting like a school child taking pictures of himself with the Danish president, the media went into overdrive, publishing pictures of Obama at work on Air Force One, Obama with President George Bush shortly after boarding the plane to come home, Obama working in the boardroom. Here, President Barack Obama jokes with former President George Bush shortly after boarding Air Force One for the trip to South Africa, December 9, 2013. Official White House photo by Pete Souza. But if you look at that table, and you take out of the picture Bush and Mrs. Bush, and you know that I've not so jokingly said America and the world are being run by the four horsewomen of the apocalypse, there they are! There's Michelle Obama, there's the strange Valerie Jarrett, the woman behind it all, Susan Rice, the woman responsible for Benghazi, and then there's another player. I didn't know who the fourth woman of the apocalypse was, but there she was. There she was. And I looked her up, and I said, oh my God, Savage, sometimes you say things and you don't even realize how right you are. The four horsewomen of the apocalypse. Does anyone know who the fourth woman is? Does anyone know who I'm talking about? Does anyone know who she is? Well, let me give you a few hints. You can look her up. Her husband is a judge in Chicago. That should give you some idea. She's a 30-year friend of the First Lady and Valerie Jarrett. And she said that when you are in progressive politics in this town, you all know each other. It's a small world. 35 years they've been working to take over the country, and they've taken it over. How you doing? You doing better than your father did? How you doing? You doing better than you did under Bush? How you doing under Barack Obama? How's the economy under Barack Obama? Better than it was under Bush? Everyone feeling better? Fewer people on welfare? More people on welfare. Fewer people on food stamps? Food stamps? More people on food stamps. Are you on food stamps? How many people are on food stamps now under Obama? So this is what I'm saying to you. Sometimes it's not a joking matter. But the propaganda was the main point. The Bushes and the Obamas on Air Force One. Suddenly he's covering himself with Bush to give himself... What do they need Bush all of a sudden for? The Bushes and Obamas board Air Force One in Johannesburg. Aboard Air Force One, the staged photos, the Soviet photos. Bush shows photos of his paintings. First Lady, Valerie Jarrett, National Security Advisor, Eric Holder is in there, and former First Lady Laura Bush. They're all admiring George Bush's paintings. The artist who painted my dog Teddy is better than George Bush. Better, believe me. Look at Dimitri's painting of Teddy on my website. President Barack Obama jokes with former President Bush shortly after boarding Air Force One for the trip to South Africa, December 9, 2013. Again, a staged photo, sitting in the lounge chair. All staged photos. But when there was no staged photo and a Reuters photographer captures him taking a picture of himself, it goes around the world. Bingo. Around the world. The picture that The picture that shot around the world is that of the juvenile president gloating as he leans over and puts his arm around the president, the beautiful president of Denmark, and takes a picture of her like he's a kid in college, like a college kid. At a funeral, no less. But what really sets this picture off, in my mind at least, is the stone-faced African sitting around him at the funeral for Nelson Mandela, a world icon. I did a whole show on Nelson Mandela, The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, the other night. But meanwhile, it was the man's funeral. And apparently Barack Obama doesn't recognize the sanctity of anything. He is supreme, even at a funeral. But the African's faces say it all. Now, to cover it up, the newspapers the next day say, oh, Barack Obama was not the only one who took a picture of himself or flirted. Here's George Bush flirting with the First Lady of Jordan. Yeah, he turned around to say hello to the First Lady of Jordan, Bush did. But he didn't snap a picture of himself with a BlackBerry with her and give a big goofy grin. And I got to tell you this, I'm not a huge fan of Michelle Obama. I don't have anything against her. I frankly think she does a fine job as a First Lady. She does as well as anyone could in the circumstance of playing second fiddle when you're as bright as she is. I have a new respect for her. Because I'll tell you this, this woman understands protocol and dignity. Her husband doesn't. She was appalled, not so much that he was flirting with that woman, as much as he was making a mockery of himself and the presidency. She was stone-faced. It wasn't the flirting. She could give a darn less, I can guarantee you. They're way past that.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-7282. Savage. Warning, the Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, the Savage Nation, home of borders, language, culture. And here he is, Michael Savage.
People are reading a lot into a photo that captured a particular moment. If you look at other moments, Michelle Obama, who was accused of looking jealously at the Danish Prime Minister, is smiling and laughing. This is a big tempest in a teapot, and it's a confluence of racist and sexist stereotypes, as if Michelle is this angry black woman, as if President Obama is this oversexed black man who every time he talks to a woman, and by the way, as if the Danish Prime Minister is just some object of flirtation as opposed to a world leader.
Looney Tunes coming out of the mouthpieces owned by the White House. Welcome to the Savage Nation. So now I suppose it's racist to note that Obama disgraced the presidency and himself, by the way, by flirting with the Danish Prime Minister at the funeral for Nelson Mandela. I suppose you can continue to play that game, but no one's buying it anymore. You can only cry wolf so many times. We're talking about the selfie that Obama took at Nelson Mandela's funeral. That was an embarrassment to himself and to the office. But mainly we're talking about other things on the program today. We're talking about Pope Francis shocked people who know what he's doing in his first peace message of his pontificate, attacking people with money. He calls for spreading the wealth in his first peace message as Pope. This is a new story. This is a big deal. He called for more sharing of wealth among people and nations, and he attacked those who are receiving big bonuses. I told you this is liberation theology. I also told you this is very dangerous. I also told you that it's hypocrisy of the greatest kind, because some will say that the Pope is throwing stones from a glass house, in that that gold palace called the Vatican was not built by the poor, it was built by the rich. And the great art that we have come to associate with the church was art that was commissioned by the rich, not by the poor. Secondly, by attacking bonuses, which all corporations give out to productive workers in order to encourage them to keep being productive, I'll ask you, the self-righteous amongst the listeners of the Savage Nation, if you were given a bonus, what would you do with it? Would you run to your nearest church and put it in the poor box? Or would you say, I have a poor family member who's having financial difficulties, let me help her? Or would you set it aside for your children's future college tuition? Or would you put it aside for your future medical costs, which are going to be astronomical? Corporations give out bonuses based on the income that the individuals bring to the company. Not all employees are equal in a corporation. Those who bring big profits get big bonuses, Mr. Pope. And those who bring nothing to the company get very, very small bonuses. They get what they deserve, in other words. That's the way the world works. That's how you encourage people to keep taking risks and to also get off their behinds and not sit around playing backgammon in Cuba. So if you want to comment on the Pope's message of spreading the wealth, the phone number is 855-407-282. Again, I have to protect myself on this program by saying to you the church is a wonderful force in the world. I am not criticizing Catholicism nor the church. I am criticizing the Pope's political message. And as a Catholic wrote, he said, Savage, the good news is this. As a faithful Catholic, I am free to ignore the Pope's comments on matters unrelated to faith and morals. And in this case, I believe the Pope is wrong. Not I believe the Pope is wrong. He is espousing liberation theology, which I explained to you, is Marxism under the guise of Catholicism. And it is spreading like a cancer through the religious world. If you care to comment, fine. The phone number is 855-407-282. There are other topics. We're talking about the selfie that Obama took of himself. It's going around. By the way, it's not been swept aside. It's a big story. No matter what they try to do on MSNBC, it's a huge story around the world. They're laughing at the man who made a mockery of the presidency. They saw him for who he is. That's all. You may not believe it. But even the Associated Press has filed a complaint against the White House saying they will not let anyone take a picture of the president. It happened only two or three times that anyone could take a picture of him actually working in his entire administration. Twice. They're all staged photographs. Staged photographs like in the ex-Soviet Union. And this picture, when he let his guard down, was taken not by the press in America, but by a Reuters photographer who caught him doing it. It's a picture that's shot around the world. Now, in the stage photos that came out afterwards about the great president's working habits aboard Air Force One, they showed President Obama, Mrs. Obama, at one of the conference tables on Air Force One, with the four horsewomen of the apocalypse. Three of them we knew, Michelle Obama, Susan Rice, the woman who gave us Benghazi, or tried to cover it up, Valerie Jarrett, the real estate speculator and all-around peasant avante from Chicago. And then there was a new player I saw in the picture, someone I'd never seen before, Tina Chen. I said, who is she? Who the heck is Tina Chen? What is she doing there? How is she sitting at the table of power like this? Well, I looked into it. Tina Chen is assistant to the president, chief of staff to the first lady. Oh, Tina Chen is assistant to the president, chief of staff to the first lady, Michelle Obama. Well, who is she? Well, let's look into it. Let's see. She is, well, whatever. She used to work in litigation at Skadden Arps. That you've got to understand. Previously a partner in corporate litigation at Skadden Arps. Incidentally, you have to ask yourself what she did at Skadden Arps. Did she represent the workers or corporations? She represented public agencies in state and federal class actions before that, meaning she played both sides of the aisle, as most of these corporate lawyers will do. Many of them take jobs defending the poor, and then once they do a great job at that, they then go to work for the big corporations taking the other side. But before working for Skadden Arps, she worked, Mrs. Chen, represented public agencies in state and federal class actions, including, listen to this, Illinois Department of Children and Family Services, the Illinois Department of Public Aid, and the Chicago Housing Authority. You have any idea what I'm saying to you? Miss Chen is the recipient of many awards, including the Leadership Award from the Women's Bar Association, blah, 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 blah. Tina Chen is a very interesting woman. She certainly is a hard worker. She works around the clock. She's driven, this and that. Tina Chen, age 50, whatever, is the daughter of a psychiatrist born in China. And she succeeded Chief of Staff Susan Scher, who was another Chicago attorney, as is the First Lady. All three are longtime progressive friends. An Ohio native, Miss Chen, T-C-H-E-N, lived in Chicago for 30 years. Before President Barack Obama, better known as the Selfie, tapped her to direct the White House Office of Public Engagement. A longtime Democratic activist, Chen was a partner in corporate litigation at Skadden Arps. She previously served on the boards of the University of Chicago Medical Center, Chicago Public Library, and did pro bono legal work. She was an early pro She was an early Barack Obama supporter and a fundraiser for Obama dating to the 04 Senate race. Well, you get the picture. You get the picture. By the way, her husband, Mr. Cohen, is a judge, some kind of judge in the Chicago courts system. They said when she was appointed, quote, that this will be a banner day for Chen, quote, a proud Chinese American, close quote, whose late parents hailed from Shanghai, fleeing communism there in 1949 and settling in Ohio. Now, that's a plus. That's a plus. I know Shanghainese. They're some of the most, the brightest of people in China. They all know what the communists did to their country. You would think that someone whose parents fled the communists would understand what communism is better than anybody else and would make certain that the policies of their bosses didn't duplicate that of Mao Zedong. That's all I have to say about the subject of the four horsewomen of the apocalypse. 855-407-282. We have not yet gotten over Obama bending over, shaking the hands of Raul Castro. Do you know what's going on in Florida over this? You don't read about it in your local propaganda rag, do you? The Cuban community in Florida fled this bearded criminal and his brother. They fled this criminal gangster regime. They know what Raul Castro does to Cubans. They're outraged over it. And yet your local newspaper has swept this under the rug. Obama bends over to gangsters and criminals around the world and then threatens the American people if they dare stand up to his policies? Yep. I wrote about it in Trickle Down Tyranny, a great Christmas present, by the way. On the cover, I said, what do you think of a president who treats friends like enemies and enemies like friends? Was I right or wrong? I was prescient. I was prescient. This is the Savage Nation. One quick note that I have to mention now. It's not a happy note. It's not a sad note. It just is a note. Tomorrow will be a kind of special day for my regular listeners because Saturday is the 10th anniversary of the passing of Mama Savage. 10 years have gone by so fast, it's shocking. I thought it was 5 years ago, 4 years ago. Time flies, as they say. It was 10 years ago this Saturday that my beautiful mother went to God. And tomorrow we're going to find all of the sound bites of when the few times she appeared on this show that was so amazing. And through the miracle of recording, we'll play a memorial to my mother during the show tomorrow. It's the Savage Nation. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
Attention, the rumors are true. The Savage Nation is moving. Listen to me, Michael Savage, starting January 2nd at noon. Noon, right here on Hot Talk 560 KSFO.
The Pope being named Man of the Year has spoken to the world eloquently about this whole issue of the vulnerable. And so I'd ask this, Mr. Woodall, in the Rules Committee, let's put the Van Hollen, Lee, and Levin Amendment on the floor tonight, tomorrow. Call us back, Mr. Boehner. Call us back, Mr. Boehner. Let us vote to provide for unemployment insurance for working men and women.
Time's expired.
So faces across America will not have the tear of desperation.
Gentlewoman's time
is
expired.
The deal is good.
Thank you, Sheila Jackson Lee. Looney Tunes were written for you. This is the Savage Nation. It gets better by the day. You know, even if the country is going to you-know-where in a handbasket, at least I can enjoy the ride. Welcome back to the program. The phone number is 855-407-282. It is 22 minutes after the hour. I'm still going strong. Moving into fourth gear for the big shift coming January. I'm like a child waiting for Christmas for that new day part, and it's like a set of toys I can't wait to play with. And I hope you'll join me on the first show, January 1. The first live show will be January 2. And on that note, I have to say this because apparently my competition is spreading the gospel that he's happy about the move. Sean Hannity lost 52 Cumulus stations, which are the best stations in America. They include WABC, WMAL, the great WLS in Chicago, KSFO in San Francisco. I can name them all, and I'm not trying to diminish the other stations. Hannity lost 52 of the greatest stations in the country. I got them. I will be on 208 stations as of now with 82 live. Sure, he has more stations than I, but, you know, size doesn't matter to everybody. It's the quality and the signal. That's the program. Okay, let's go to the callers on the program. Again, tomorrow, special memorial. It'll be short. I don't want to bum anyone out to my mom. It'll be some really fun sound from when she was living in Florida and calling the show. I would call her. We'd have conversations while I was still a local talk show host. It was pretty amazing stuff. She was very quick on the draw. Bob, Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania, WILK. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Michael, the Democrats are absolutely brilliant. The DNC takes donations of $10, $5. All the common people, the working people, can donate. And the, as far as the picture goes with the Danish Prime Minister, he took a picture with his cell phone like all the 21-year-olds and the 19-year-olds. They do at the mall. Obama's just like us.
Yeah, that's exactly the point. Children should be seen and not heard. Children know nothing. They need an adult as a role model. The president is the last thing they need.
Obama does it for the Democrats to be in touch with the people. And that's the problem.
I know, the morons, the idiots, the useful idiots that Lenin wrote about. I don't care whether they're young or old, good-looking or ugly. They're the useful idiots, the Pied Piper. I get it. Believe me, I get it. They're moronic. They still believe in global warming while they're going out to buy a butt of a pair of Huggy boots because of the blizzard hitting them. They're that brainwashed from 20 years in the government schools. They're shivering. They're freezing. In a cold winter, they're talking about global warming and grizzly bears on the ice because Al Gore, the liar, told them about it. Thanks for the call. I feel very energized from taking one day off for myself and going to the museum. And as I got to tell you again, it's not to try to tell you I went to the museum 80 times. When I walked through the exhibit that nobody was in, people were in the other exhibits, and I went into the exhibit of the Middle Ages of tapestries, and I saw the three theological virtues of faith, hope, and charity, and then the cardinal virtues as expressed in these tapestries that the church commissioned in that century. Virtues. What are the four cardinal virtues? The writings of classical antiquity and along with the theological virtues also in Christian tradition, are they taught today? Are children taught faith, hope, and charity? Are they taught prudence, justice, temperance, and fortitude? Or are they taught to take a selfie and to take a pill? They're taught take a selfie and then take an Adderall. That's what they're taught by this degenerate group of non-leaders in the Democrat Party and the media and Hollywood. Don't believe in faith, hope, and charity. Take a pill, smoke a joint, pollute your mind, pollute your body, and then sleep with anyone you want like a damn mink under a tree. That's the country I'm living in. What can I tell you? What can I tell you? I'm disgusted with a president who looks like a kid taking a picture of himself. That's all. Faith, hope, and charity. It's pretty interesting. Cardinal virtues. I go to a museum, I get uplifted. Pretty amazing. I keep going past the same sarcophagus that I don't know, as I get older, I don't go near it as much, but there was a sarcophagus down in the basement of the Palace of the Legion of Honor. I can't help it. I'm drawn to it like a fly to you-know-what. After walking through the exhibits, I go down to the lower basement near the cafeteria. I like museum cafeterias. It's all the liberals that don't work, having like a sensible sandwich, a sensible glass of horrendous wine, being educated, you know, well, what else am I supposed to do? It's better than going, you know, doing nothing, I suppose. And sensible oldsters with white hair, probably all of whom vote for Obama, having, as I say, the sensible tuna salad sandwich, which is all mayonnaise, by the way, horrible for them, and cheap wine, sitting in the art garden, very nice. But right next to that room in the Palace of the Legion of Honor in San Francisco, great museum, incidentally, is the sarcophagus that I would go past with the children when they were very young, and time is click, tick, clicky, ticky, ticky, clicky, time. Moving on, my friends. How many years have I looked at that sarcophagus? You know, when you're young, you look at a sarcophagus as an art object. As you get a little older and the children reach the teens, the sarcophagus no longer looks so much like an art object as something sensible for the ancient Romans. And as you get even older, the marble sarcophagus, the etchings in, on the side of it, the frieze work on the side of the marble sarcophagus, you start to look not only at the artistry of the ancient Romans who could do such things out of marble, but you wonder if anyone could do it today. I'm telling you, everything requires a different perspective as you go on in life. That's why I say a selfie is the work of a selfish man.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-7282. Savage.
they've tried to couch her in this stereotypical racist narrative of the angry black woman. And again, the fact that we're talking about a selfie or that people are trying to push to read a selfie says two really sad things. One, technology overdetermines our news media and our political discourses. But then two, we don't have enough substantive things to deal with in our nation or in the world that we're going to spend time trying to take. This is not even a moment. This is a second out of a moment that the people are zeroed in on. So
Another genius on MSNBC saying it's racist to note that Obama disgraced the presidency. He said, oh, this is a moment. Well, shooting someone only takes a moment. Yeah, only takes a moment. You shouldn't notice the shooting, though. Shooting a cop, for example, in a traffic stop. You can't judge the man who shot the cop. He got excited. It was only a moment. You can't call him a name because he shot the cop. It only took a moment to pull the trigger. But, you know, hey. So now we're talking about the moment that we're living with of liberation theology being pushed now by the writings of our new pope. Which, you don't know what liberation theology is. We heard about it when Obama was sitting in Reverend Wright's church for over 20 years, learning this. He was seeped in it. Some people are seethed in philosophies, and it goes in their ears, as I've been trying to tell you. Some are seethed in the beauty of America, the greatness of the nation, in their churches. Some are seethed in hatred for America in their churches, which is what, of course, the president was seethed, was brought up on. It should have been an issue when he was elected, but the damn Republicans wouldn't let us talk about it. Old John McCain, the cover-up artist, who's now trying to cover up who he actually is, forbade us from talking about this, about Reverend Wright. It could have undermined Obama and elected McCain. I don't know what a bargain that would have been, but I would have slept better at night knowing McCain was the president with regard to the war on terror, with regard to the war on the American people, with regard to the war on the military, with regard to the war on conservatives. That wouldn't have happened under McCain, as bumbling as he is. No. So now we have a liberation theologist in the White House, a liberation theologist in Rome, and a liberation theologist in New York City's mayorship, as far as I can tell. And they're not alone. Every major coastal city dominated by illegal aliens has elevated a liberation theologist to become the political head. Sure, we all want to fight poverty. How'd that work out in America since LBJ's war on poverty? How'd that work out after several trillion dollars? How did increasing the welfare state work for the poor in America? Well, we have more food stamps, people on food stamps than ever before. Food stamps. They're on food stamps. Why do they need food stamps? Obviously, they need them because they can't make a living or they're too lazy to make a living. The term liberation theology was coined in 1971 by the Peruvian priest Gustavo Gutierrez, who wrote a book on it. And it was picked up and it was, let us say, amalgamated by the Catholic Church. It was rejected, by the way, because of its Marxist connections in the Vatican's Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith in 1984 and 1986. But apparently it's resurfacing. It's resurfacing because apparently the Vatican now has embraced it. Do you understand why this is so important as a Catholic? If you're a Catholic listening to this show, you have to understand you can be a proud Catholic, you can love your religion, you can love your church, you can support your church, but you don't have to accept the political writings of anyone in the church. You are free to ignore the comments of the church on matters unrelated to faith and morals. That is what a church is for. Matters related to faith and morals, not matters related to bonuses and greed and inequality. How much more can we give the poor? And by the way, I mean, there's such a degree of hypocrisy in it, as people have noted. It's an embarrassment to have to say it, but the great art of the Vatican was created by wealth, not by poverty. The great art of the Vatican, the building itself, the Vatican, the beautiful Vatican building, was constructed with donations from the wealthiest of citizens, not from the poorest. And if you want to dumb down a nation and you want to keep going to the lowest common denominator, what you wind up with is rubble. If you keep pandering to the lowest common denominator, whether it be in a classroom or a nation, you wind up with chaos and rubble. And I'll take it right back to the fifth grade. I was just a student, whatever. I wasn't a particularly brilliant student. And I didn't like school at all. I hated school. I couldn't sit still, couldn't stand it. And I met a kid who was worse than me. And he was a real troublemaker. And the minute he and I, our eyes crossed, I was a new kid in the school. I moved from another neighborhood. We clicked, and we caused mayhem in the class. We did every mischievous thing you could imagine. I don't mean anything evil. We couldn't take the teacher. We couldn't take the classroom's rigidity. So like prisoners, we created a... she put me in the far right corner front, and she put him in the far left corner back. So what we did was he brought string to school the next day, and I'm remembering it now for the first time. We wrapped the string around the leg of one of my chairs, and we had the other kids pass it back, like in a prison, to the kid in the back, my friend, my mischievous friend. And we then had a rope, a little string we could pull and pass messages. So we'd be facing front, frontwards, and I would tie a message to him, and he'd pull it to the back, and he'd read it and laugh. The other kids were in on the joke, and they would see what we were doing, and they'd nudge each other. It was a lot of fun, by the way. I'll never forget the teacher caught us, and she kept us after school, and she screamed at us, and she said, I remember to this day, and I'm a much older guy, I'm no longer in the fifth grade, and she said, I'll never understand, I think she said it to my mother, why the lowest common denominator always brings down the highest. Why when you mix the two together, the worst students will always dictate the classroom's behavior, not the best students. If that does not tell you what's going on in America today, I'd like to know what is. This constant pandering to the illiterate, to the gangster, to the degenerate, to the Hollywood slut. Where have we gone as a country when we let these people dictate to us what our nation should be thinking about and acting like? Where? I'm not saying they don't have a place in society. Yeah, everyone has a place in society from the low to the high. But when you glorify the low, the entire nation goes in that direction. Which brings us right back to the issue of the president taking a selfie. Unto itself, it's not a big deal. But for a president to do it, it is a big deal. At a funeral for Nelson Mandela, it's even a bigger deal. And if you see the pictures taken by Reuters of the stone-faced Africans sitting around them, you'll understand how it is being talked about around the world, not around the block. They're appalled by this man's goofiness and lack of self-respect. And I have a new respect for Michelle Obama, as I said to you. She is stone-faced, appalled by her husband's behavior. Why? You say, oh, because he was flirting with the president of Denmark, a beautiful white woman. That's not it at all. It had nothing to do with the flirtation. She's so past that, she could care less. She's appalled because he disgraced the presidency. That's how I see it. She understood what he was doing. She had dignity. He didn't. That's how I see it. I don't intend to talk about this again, but it had to be talked about today again. That's all. I'd rather talk about the Vatican and the Pope. I'd rather talk about liberation theology. I'd rather talk about how Catholics are going to deal with this. I'd rather talk about it so the Catholics can hold their head up and go to church on Sunday and not feel that they have to become little Marxists in order to become a good Catholic. How do you feel about it? Am I wrong or right? Is he wrong or right? Barry on WABC, fire away. You're on the Savage Nation.
Mike.
Yes.
I plan my day around your show. I take a nap in the afternoon. I get up. I have two giant extra large iced coffees. I load it up with sugar, and I'm ready to go to try to keep up with you guys.
Let me tell you, I do the same thing, but I don't take the coffee and sugar because I'd be up all night.
And you don't have to deal with Bloomberg. But I tell you what, I like to caution this audience. In life, you don't get to pick other people's heroes. I mean, last week you had Slick Willie running around saying Mandela taught him not to hate. Meanwhile, he met Mandela in his 40s. I mean, we know he's doing this because he has the Hildebeest warming up in the bullpen to 2016. And I really believe, no matter what anybody says, and everyone's getting ready for January 1st, be there, say you experienced it, but Obama has won. Everything he sought out to do, he's accomplished. He's expanded the government, Medicaid, New York
City. And he just announced today he's going to grant amnesty again to the so-called young dreamers. Another 4.1 million who elected him, by the way. The margin of error between him and Romney was only a few, about 3, 4 million people. They forget that he granted amnesty just before the election to 4 million young Latinos or Hispanics. How many of them voted without the right to vote? Do we know?
Well, we know illegal aliens are voting, and unfortunately, when it comes to amnesty, the Republican Party is an echo chamber of the Democrats.
Absolutely. Of course they are, because the big businesses want the workers. Okay, we all know that story. That's going to be the big one of 2014. But what's your main story about the sign language criminal?
Well, to me, I would have to say, Mike, it's a meltdown of the Secret Service. I would say the Secret Service has been infiltrated by affirmative action. You don't have the top quality guys there anymore. People probably leave it because the president flies all around the place. They're always out of the White House. So your work schedule has got to be crazy if you have a family. So I would say...
Yeah, well, let me frame this. The sign language faker at the Nelson Mandela funeral says that he's a schizophrenic. He's been violent in the past. And people are saying all he did was flap his arms around and basically signal gibberish because he was not using regular signs for deaf people. So I said, what do you mean? He flapped his arms around and spoke gibberish? I said, it sounds like the president himself. Okay, that's a bad joke. But the fact of the matter is, what's not a laughing matter is that he's a violent man. He was next to the president, 31 world leaders, for 4 hours, and the Secret Service didn't vet him? The NSA, who spies on all of us, didn't catch this before it happened?
Well, Mike, let's look at some of the answers. He has a lunatic next to him, about 10 feet from him, who shouldn't be there. He's flirting with some woman a few feet away. But let's also add, remember the guy who threw the shoe at George Bush? To me, that's a major breakdown in the Secret Service. Remember when Bush gave a speech in Russia? About 30 rows out, there was a hand grenade. So the Secret Service, like all of our...
Yeah, but they're not perfect. None of these services are perfect. They can only do so much. How about when the senior Bush went to China and puked after a meal? Why did he throw up? What was in the meal?
Well, that was in Japan.
Must have been the Indian food I've been eating lately, but I don't know if they had the same chef over there in Shanghai at the time. Well, anyway, so, Barry, are you looking forward to the show's beginning 3 to 6 come January?
Let me tell you something, Mike. You're coming on in January, and I'll tell you what. The rest of the country who hasn't heard you yet, people who listen to talk radio in the afternoon, they're going to love your show because you tackle the big issues of the day. Hannity would ban callers from his show who talked about immigration. I'll never forget Election Day. There's another talk show host who calls his show who has the same name as a basketball player. He told Hannity he's driving around Ohio when there's big lines of people waiting to get online to vote and Romney was going to win Ohio. Hannity turned into basically like a no-frills type individual on talk radio. It's not going to work.
No, it's okay. He's got a limited capacity. When he does the Republican talking points or he lets guests talk, he can get away with it. On radio, you hear the real man, and when he goes off script, he sounds like a dummy in plain English. It's that simple. It's actually sad to listen to him groping. You ought to stick to his script. I got to tell you, a lot of them are trying to copy me and go on the Natch, talk about lunch and the family and travel. When he does it, what you hear is the dummy that he really is. Hannity lost 52 cumulus stations. I got them all. I landed on the top stations. I am the one who has the beachfront property. He doesn't. And this is where I belong from day one. I've dreamed about it for 20 years. I can't wait for January 1st, Barry, and I hope you're there with me with the iced coffee and the sugar. Thanks for listening. Let's move over to Boston. You want to talk about Catholics? You want to talk about the church? You want to talk about the Pope? There's no better place than Boston. WRKO, Kevin, fire away. You're on the radio. Go ahead, please.
Thank you, Michael. Michael, I want to say so much. We are privileged that you've changed global warming here in Boston. You are responsible for giving us Jeff Kuhner. So these cold-hearted liberals, believe me, they are waking up. And
I get it. Jeff's a great guy, terrific guy. Used to fill in for me. I'm glad he has a morning show on RKO. But what is it about the Vatican that you wanted to say, Kevin?
Here it is. It's an oxymoron for the Pope, which I have great, great admiration and respect for. For him to disparage, okay, going out and being ambitious, going to the hard lines of capitalism. And here it is, just last week, I find it odd that the World Bank is rebuking 71 of the Vatican banks for not having their own affairs in order. So before we can reach out and give disciplinary, tools or advice, shouldn't we have our own affairs in line? I mean, that's my point.
Well, I think that if you start speaking about spreading the wealth, intelligent people in your church are going to say, okay, let's start at home. A person has to get their own house in order first. That's what you're saying.
Exactly. And as you pointed out, too, this week, I mean, who's the largest landowner of Manhattan? Okay. But
Who is the largest landowner?
Well, it happens to be the Roman Catholic Bank.
What do they own? They own a lot of property in Manhattan? I didn't know that.
Yes, yes, they're the greatest holder of, I mean...
By the way, very few people know this. This is an obscure point. Check it out and you'll see I'm right. Do you know that Fidel Castro, and you know what he did to the Cuban people, do you know that he went to a Catholic boys' school in the Bronx? Did you know that?
I did not, Michael.
Very few people know this. I heard it from someone who knows this for a fact. He was also a lawyer, and that's neither here nor there, but it's a little here rather than there. But he went to a private Catholic boys' school in the Bronx. Check it out and see if I'm making it up. Thanks for the call, 855-497-282. That opens up one line to the Savage Nation. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
Attention, the rumors are true. The Savage Nation is moving. Listen to me, Michael Savage, starting January 2nd at noon. Noon, right here on Hot Talk 560 KSFO.
I'm proud to tell you, I haven't said the word Obamacare tonight. It's an Obamacare-free radio show.
I mean, it's an important topic, but what can I say about it that you haven't heard for 50,000 hours by now? It's horrible, it stinks, it's no good, the website doesn't work, it's failing. The middle class is paying for the people on the bottom. The young who are healthy are paying for everyone else. They were suckered by Obama, the selfie. I love the young, the geniuses. They're supposed to look to the young for they know any. The morons, they're the ones who elected him. So now they're finding out that they were the ones screwed by Obamacare. They're the ones who are going to pay for everybody else. So how did they know? Now they're finding out? Okay, that's that. Maybe we need on the other side a guy who does selfies. Maybe is there anyone on the other side who loves America who can do a selfie? Someone came back from the Special Forces or the U.S. Army and run for office? Some hero, a real hero, instead of these Fruit Loops that we have running everywhere? Unbelievable. Why don't we get someone from the military to run for office? Now, a few of them are out there. The real G.I. Joes, one of them ought to run instead of the Fruit Loops. Everywhere you turn, Republican, Democrat, it's all the same. All on medication. All medicated guys with pink ties. You talk about virtues. Is there a virtuous man amongst us, you ought to ask. You ask yourself. Where are the leaders? Where are these leaders that we need? Where are they going to come from? They're out there. The young men who have faith, hope, and charity, who have real virtues. Yeah, I'll say the real virtues from classical antiquity. Prudence. What does prudence mean? The ability to judge between actions with regard to appropriate actions at a given time. Oh, okay, so taking a selfie at Mandela's funeral would not be prudent. Okay, let's check that one off. Let's see. Justice. The perpetual and constant will of rendering to each one his right. Okay, that would be speaking out of one side of his mouth about the poor and the illegal alien and then living like a czar never could dream of living. Okay, no justice there. Temperance or restraint. Practicing self-control, abstention, and moderation, tempering the appetition. No, I don't think that applies to the White House, do you? Temperance or restraint? Don't think so. And finally, fortitude. Forbearance, endurance, and ability to confront fear, uncertainty, intimidation. Yes, we give him an A on that. If I was the president's teacher, he gets an A on fortitude and an F on the other virtues. It's that simple. Man has great fortitude, I got to tell you that. But when you wed fortitude... and you don't, to non-prudence, non-justice, and non-temperance, we have a problem. It's called the American Society of Today. Welcome to the Savage Nation. Moving January 1st to a new time. Probably the same homes you're listening to me on. It's that simple. January 1st is a replay of all my family stories because most people are either, they have a hangover, they're drunk or watching sports, so I'm not going to go live and blow the whole wad on January 1. January 2 is the real live show. I'm going to do it probably live out of KSFO Studios in San Francisco, incidentally. I'll have a small group of friends and family with some nauseating, finger food after. It's going to be terrible. You put food in the studio with me around it, it's not going to last till the end of the show. It's not going to last. Greasy fingers for the Telos board, greasy fingers for the computer. The dog will be there biting everyone's toes. It'll be a lot of fun. It's the Savage Nation.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-7282. The Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation, home of borders, language, culture. And here he is, Michael Savage.
Well, today has so many sound pieces and so many stories that you're going to love. If you've been listening, I mean, where do I begin? Let's begin with the fake sign language fraud at the Mandela event who said he hallucinated and was just flapping his hands around.
What happened that day? It was a very much, I don't know what could I call it. I see angels come to the stadium. And immediately I see angels come to the stadium. I start realizing that the problem is here.
Well, frankly, I thought that that's what Obama was doing since he took office. But the sign language interpreter who's a fraud at Nelson Mandela's memorial says he suffers from schizophrenia and hallucinated and saw angels while gesturing incoherently 3 feet away from President Barack Obama and other world leaders. By the way, he's known for violent outbreaks. So let me ask you something. The NSA spies on Americans and others around the world, and he was able to stand next to Obama for a four-hour period and he hadn't been vetted by our NSA. Our NSA monitors calls of 35 world leaders, but not a deaf sign language fraud who could have gone crazy. Can you believe this government, how incompetent it is? It's astounding, isn't it? It is astounding. This story is amazing. With this guy's communication and storytelling skills, however, I think he could get a permanent job as the White House communication director. All he has to do is flap his arms and utter nonsense, and he will be lauded as a genius on all of the networks. Other stories is, this is a giant one. You're not going to believe it. The Pope is at it again. The Pope called for spreading the wealth in his first peace message. Do you understand what's going on? Do you understand he's the first non-European Pope in 1,400 years? Do you know what this means? It means it's all been planned. We have a Marxist in the White House, a Marxist in New York City's mayorship. We have a Marxist now in the Pope's arena. Can you understand this, that this is a standard message of liberation theology? It is wealth redistribution, pure and simple. Does the Pope not realize that often the people who make the most and give away the most are the rich? It's not the poor who built the palace in which he sleeps every night. There will always be poor and needy, no matter how much you take from the rich. And if you wreck enough rich, you'll wind up with the Soviet Union with 100 people fighting over one salami. Pope Francis calls for spreading the wealth in his first peace message as Pope. He did it again. I must tell you, I was the first one to point out to you that it's liberation theology. This is the first Pope in 1,400 years who was non-European. This is all planned. So Pope Francis attacks mega salaries and big bonuses Thursday, saying in the first peace message of his pontificate that they are symptoms of an economy based on greed and inequality. In his message for the Roman Catholic Church's World Day of Peace, marked by the church around the world on Jan 1, he called for more sharing of wealth among people and nations to narrow the gap between the rich and the poor. The Pope said the grave financial and economic crisis of the present time have pushed man to seek satisfaction, happiness, and security in consumption and earnings out of all proportion to the principles of a sound economy. He's an economist now. A former bouncer is now an economist. The Pope went on. He said the succession of economic crises should lead to a timely rethinking of our models of economic development and to a change in lifestyles. That's what Karl Marx said, by the way, to a rethinking of our models of economic development. That's all Karl Marx wanted, was a rethinking of our models of economic development. And what that led to in the ex-Russia became the Soviet Union was there was one salami hanging in the store and there was a line around the block to buy the one salami. You see, the poor people don't know how to invest money to bid on a salami or many salamis. They line up to get a free salami. Francis was named Time Magazine's a person of the year. That means nothing. Time Magazine was sold for a dollar. Or was it $3? Has urged his own church to be more fair, frugal, and less pompous, to be closer to the poor and suffering, and so forth and so on. Now, to his credit, the new Pope's style is characterized by frugality. He shunned the spacious papal apartment in the Vatican's apostolic palace to live in a small suite in a Vatican guest house. And he prefers a Ford Focus to the traditional Pope's Mercedes. Well, I myself prefer a Mercedes to a Ford Focus, and I guarantee you his guest house quarters are better than mine, but nevertheless, he is the Pope after all. He's entitled to it. But let me ask you something. Where do you think the so-called treasures of the Vatican came from? Were they donated by the poor of Europe at that time, or was it as a result of the rich who commissioned the art? Any questions on that? Do you understand what I just said to you? I am not attacking the Catholic Church nor Catholicism. I will say that again. The Catholic Church is a fabulous institution, and Catholicism is a great religion. But as someone wrote, the good news is this. As a faithful Catholic, he is free to ignore his comments on matters unrelated to faith and morals. And in this case, I believe the Pope is wrong. Do you believe the Pope is right or wrong? 855-407-282. So we've been talking about the president disrespecting himself, the office of the presidency, and the United States of America by goofing around like a child at a funeral. Daily News has the best panel of pictures, by far. The pictures are so revealing of Michelle Obama sitting stoically, looking onward with the respect that is expected at a funeral, whether it be for a local butcher or candle maker, let alone a world leader. And there's old Barry playing around with a cell phone, taking a picture of himself with the blonde leader of Denmark and the schmuck from England, the fake conservative putz from England, Cameron, who ran as a conservative and is anything but, just a watered down, you know what. And the pictures are very telling. And shaking hands with the Cuban dictator. The most oppressed people of the century amongst them will be the Cuban people, a story that's never told by the communist media. Obama goes to Mandela's funeral and poses in a selfie that teenage girls take with goofy big teeth showing and takes a picture of himself with the beautiful president of Denmark while Mrs. Obama sits there grimly to his side. And if you look carefully at the pictures, you'll be shocked to see the faces of the African leaders around Obama as he is acting like a child, a narcissistic child, snapping pictures of himself at the funeral. And then look at the faces of the Africans around him. What a mockery he is of a president, this man. And then he bows down to a Cuban dictator, shakes the hand of a murderer, a Hitler. A Hitler! Raul Castro is a worse Hitler than his brother. Ask the Cubans if you don't know what's really going on there. Ask the Cubans what's really going on there. This man knows no bounds to his inability to comprehend how he is seen in the world. It's disgusting, frankly. Our president, who takes every excuse to grab attention for himself, was there in full self-aggrandizing glory. As I said, he even took the time to snap an adolescent selfie or self-portrait with the prime ministers of Denmark and Britain during the service. Literally, I shouldn't say gaping at, but sort of gaping at the prime minister of Denmark, the beautiful blonde leader of Denmark, like a kid trying to pick someone up at a nightclub, with his wife sitting nearby, stoically looking on at the services. It's unbelievable to me. We're also talking about the flu vaccine that was imposed upon the people of New York City by the so-called city council, a star chamber of Bloomberg. God knows what he's going to do after he leaves New York City, the Napoleon of New York City. God knows he may think he could be president. Many of these people live in a bubble. I'm sure that he looks in the mirror and says, President Bloomberg, Vice President Bloomberg. And then he says, why not? Why not? Why not? If I could impose these things on New Yorkers and nothing happened, why can't I do it to the rest of America? Go figure. 855-400-SAVAGE is the Savage Nation. There is nothing more political than your health. You should know the truth about flu shots. You should know who's getting rich on the flu vaccine. You should know why you may not be advised to take the flu vaccine. And you should also be aware that your child may be very sensitive to flu vaccine. People should understand that the flu may, you know, it's a very interesting concept of how you get a disease to begin with. We're exposed to viruses, bacteria, and other microbes on a daily basis. We all know that. We learned that in high school. Why do you get sick sometimes and not others? Well, maybe your immunity is a little repressed, or maybe you're exposed to an extra large, you know, dose of the pathogen. When you do diminish the capacity for a bacteria to invade your body, you may also diminish the capacity for a virus to replicate in your body. It's sort of the atom bomb needed to set off the hydrogen bomb. People forget that the hydrogen bomb uses an atom bomb trigger.
There's an awful lot of anecdotal and other evidence that the bacterial infection often precedes the viral infection. It's an interesting theory that you should pay attention to. I read many things on preventing illness, and something I've worked at all of my life. I've been a germaphobe since I'm a child. I was raised in a germaphobic family. Every mother of my mother's generation was a home doctor. They all were paranoid about their kids getting sick. Because remember, I go back a long time in history, and my mother at the time, there was a polio epidemic in New York in the early 50s, in America in the early 50s. The mothers were just in a state of shock and panic all the time. And there were many old wives' tales of what would do it, and they kept you away from crowds and this and that. Some of it was, you know, rationally based, and most of it was not. But we all grew up with a certain fear of illness and a fear of disease, and became, in looking over our shoulder, became a lot more cognizant of how to prevent disease. With me, it became an obsession, and I went into the alternative health fields, always looking outside the mainstream for the answers, as I do on the radio show, when you think about it. And the interesting thing about many viral illnesses is that they are, in essence, triggered by bacterial invasions. So if you can prevent the bacteria from settling in your body, so to speak, perhaps you can also stop the viral infection. That goes all the way up the viral chain, I believe, right up to some cancers. I know you're going to say, oh, what does he know about that? Well, what don't I know about that? What do you know about it that I don't know about that? 855-407-2822. Now, I am doing other things to prevent the flu, Ryan. And that includes, for example, taking large doses in the flu season of vitamin D and vitamin A to build up my immunity, or to, let's say, stimulate my immune system. Vitamin D is a powerful stimulant. Vitamin A is a very important element of autoimmunity. People don't realize that. We're all into vitamin C. I've been on mega doses of vitamin C ever since I read Pauling, which goes back to 1969. It's worked for me and my family. You can mock it all you want. I could care less. I know it's something that worked. My mentor was Dr. Robert F. Cathcart III, a medical doctor with great medical degrees, who in fact he was an orthopedic surgeon. Bob died about 5 years ago. But Bob was a teacher of mine, and Bob found, as an orthopedic surgeon, he was not into vitamins at all. He practiced in Incline Village, Nevada. He was an orthopedic surgeon who fixed broken bones, mainly of skiers. And he found that the skiers who were taking on their own, taking high doses of vitamin C, would heal faster. Their legs, their bones knitted faster. I mean, that's a well-known fact today. Even my professor, when I was working for my PhD, he was a regular medical doctor, not into vitamins at all. And he said, you know, it's interesting, but burn victims, crash victims all heal faster if they're given mega doses of vitamin C, especially intravenously. And I'm talking back in the 70s, he said that to me. So I've been taking mega doses of vitamin C and many other vitamins for God knows how long. And I up it whenever I feel like I'm, you know, exposed or whatever. But there are other elements to, commonsensical elements that you should pay attention to in flu season. And you want to hear the simplest one is what your mother told you. When you get home from being outside, will you take your shoes off at the door? And will you please go and scrub your hands and your face with soap and water? Hygiene, common sense hand washing can go an awful long way to preventing the spread of common illnesses and perhaps even more serious illnesses. Common sense hygienic activities. You come in from the outside, you've been outdoors. You know what I mean? This is common today. Supermarkets with the hand wipes and the gloves. It's not crazy. It's sensible. Especially when we live in a nation where we are flooded with third world immigrant invaders who have no concept of health prevention. No concept whatsoever. They come from third world nations with diseases that have been annihilated in America, which are now resurging in America because of a complete breakdown in the protections of the larger population. And I don't think I'm wrong to talk about it. I can't sit on the sidelines. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
It is the Savage Nation, and there's a lot of stories, okay, and I've touched on some of them. Francis the Pope calls for spreading the wealth in his first peace message as Pope. You may say, that's not a bad idea. Hey, we just want these big salaries and big bonuses to be spread amongst the people. Well, okay, so if you were given a bonus as a worker, what would you do with it? Take it to the church box, poor box? Or put it aside for your future, for your children's education? Do you have any idea what the man is saying? Do you have any idea what a threat this is to our civilization in terms of our economic civilization? It's the antithesis of our economic civilization. We have in the White House Barack Obama, who sat in a church that espoused liberation theology for many years, for decades, frankly. And frankly, whether he dropped that because now he's drunk with power is a real question. We don't know. I think the left thinks so. Then we have de Blasio, who saluted the Sandinistas in his run for the mayorship of New York, using class warfare as his weapon to become mayor of New York. Then we have a new pope, the first non-European in 1,400 years, who was espousing fundamentalist liberation theology. Now, one other thing about liberation theology is that the influence of such liberation theology, which is not new to the Catholic Church, it's recent but not new. The term was coined in 1971 by the Peruvian priest Gustavo Gutierrez, who wrote a book called The Theology of Liberation. And this was fundamentally Marxism, Christianity through the eyes of the poor. Detractors have called it Christianized Marxism, which is what it is in my mind. What happened is the influence of such liberation theology diminished after the proponents had been accused of using Marxist concepts, and it led to admonishment by the Vatican's Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith in 1984 and 1986. The Vatican went further and criticized certain strains of liberation theology. Why? Because they even identified Catholic Church hierarchy in South America as members of the same privileged class that had long been oppressing indigenous populations since the arrival of Pizarro and onward. So in other words, what? The privileged classes in South America didn't include the head of the churches? Of course it did. Then eventually these liberation theologians turned on them.
Savage.
Writers of the 20th century. Sadly, many people have not heard of him. I don't remember him. But Chesterton argued eloquently against all the trends that eventually took over the 20th century. Materialism, scientific determinism, moral relativism, and spineless agnosticism. What was it he defended? What was he defending? Chesterton defended the common man and common sense. He defended the family, he defended beauty, and he defended Christianity and the Catholic faith. Look, these don't play well in the classroom today, nor in the media, nor in the public arena. That's why he's forgotten. Joining us now in the Savage Nation is Dale Alquist, president of the American Chesterton Society, to give us a little insight on who Chesterton was and why you may be interested in knowing more about him. Dale Alquist, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Great to be with you, Michael.
So why do you think there should be more of an interest in G.K. Chesterton? He's so out of date, isn't he?
Well, when he was alive, he was one of the most famous writers in the world, and he was famous for a reason. He was right about what he talked about, and people were attracted to his truth. They were attracted to the charity that came with his truth, and the fact is he was very prophetic in his truth, and he seems to be as relevant now, perhaps even more relevant now than in the time when he wrote almost 100 years ago.
Well, what would Mr. Chesterton have to say about what's happening to the family in the United States?
Well, unfortunately, he predicted that that this was the great danger to our society. He said the family is the basic unit of society. It really is the brick that can't be broken. If you split up a society into just individual interests, it will come apart. If you split it up into the community interests, it will become basically a slave state. So the family is the only thing that keeps a nation free. It is the best way to educate people. It's the best way to make them into good citizens, and it's the way you teach morality and goodness.
What were his thoughts on big government?
Well, Chesterton really saw the way that government would start to undermine the family and replace the role of the family. And you know, one of the ways it's happened is taking away the authority of parents to educate their children the way they want to teach them the morality that has been passed on to them from one generation to the next, and the freedom that comes inside the home that has now been invaded by the state.
I understand he uttered prophetic words about modern education. What are some of these utterances?
Yeah, that goes right along with the decline of the family. When we've given the power to educate our children over to the government, we have given the government more power than it's ever had in all of history. Chesterton said that the state had less power over a man when it could send him to be burnt at the stake than it does now when it sends him to the public school, because you are controlling the lives and souls of children at their most vulnerable and at their most malleable stage. And Chesterton says the truth, what education is simply truth in the state of transmission. It's passing the truth from one generation to the next. And if we can't agree on what the truth is, well, then how can we teach it to our children? And the government really has no way of declaring what the truth is. It simply cannot say what the truth is. And yet we've put the government in charge of educating our children. And, you know, I have to say, it's one thing to just sit and criticize the public schools. And that's a little too easy to do. I want you to know, Michael, we've done something much more positive than that. We've created a new school, a new high school called Chesterton Academy. And it is devoted to a very classical education. We emphasize not only the great Western literature, going all the way back to Homer, but we emphasize the arts so that all of our students learn how to draw and paint. All of our students learn how to sing and act. And we have 4 years of philosophy. We're probably one of the only high schools in the country that has 4 years of philosophy. So Chesterton Academy is a model of an example of how to do things right with education. And it's based on the ideas, using Chesterton as a model of a complete thinker.
Unlike most of the writers and media today, Chesterton defended his belief in Christianity.
Well, you know, you have to understand why Chesterton openly defended Christianity and the Catholic Church was because that was one of the foundational elements in building Western civilization. And what he saw happening was that Western civilization was coming apart. And one of the reasons it was coming apart was because there was this attack on the church. The church was really fundamental in educating people, in providing a moral fabric to the society, and it gave the society its great heroes, and there was a common bond that held the society together, and the church was largely responsible for it. And what the church did, and Chesterton points this out beautifully, is it combined the Hebrew God with the Western philosophers, Plato and Aristotle, and it married theology and philosophy for the very first time in history, and that was the foundation of our civilization. Chesterton argues it really eloquently, and we've just simply forgotten these arguments. We've forgotten where we've come from.
Do you see another writer out there like Chesterton?
Well, unfortunately, no. The long answer to that is no, and so is the short answer. Chesterton is one of those writers that comes along only once in a history of man. He's kind of like Thomas Aquinas or Aristotle or name any of the really unique great writers who just haven't been matched by anyone else. I don't think we've even fully begun to realize how profound and how wide-ranging Chesterton was as a writer. And I think the more we discover him now, we're going to realize there isn't anyone else like him. But the great thing is, we have Chesterton. We have what he wrote, and that's what needs to be rediscovered, is his great, profound, and very relevant writing.
Okay, where can we read more?
Well, please visit our website at chesterton.org. That's chesterton.org, O-R-G. If they go to chesterton.com, they get hydraulic valves, and, you know, if that's what they need, that's where they should go. But chesterton.org tells you all about the American Chesterton Society and our attempts to get a revival going in this great writer. But there's plenty of information there. We have all of his books in print available through our website.
Dale Alquist, thanks for being with us on the Savage Nation.
What a great pleasure for me, Michael.
I admit that this is a little different type of show, and it's not devoted strictly to what you might expect, you heard you might expect. Would you please mark your calendars for January 1st when this show moves to prime time, drive time, East Coast 3 to 6, West Coast 12 to 3 on the best stations in the United States of America? I will be on the biggest radio stations in the country. I am the hands-down winner of the talk radio sweepstakes. You know, you may think I blow my own horn, but I don't do it often enough. The fact of the matter is, while others have been downgraded from major stations and pushed to minor signals that no one will ever listen to, Michael Savage is going to prime time on the biggest stations. Mark the date. With God's will and your listenership, I'll be here. 855-400-7282. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
Pope Francis shocked people who know what he's doing. In his first peace message of his pontificate, attacking people with money. He calls for spreading the wealth in his first peace message as Pope. This is a new story. This is a big deal. He called for more sharing of wealth among people and nations, and he attacked those who are receiving big bonuses. I told you this is liberation theology. I also told you this is very dangerous. I also told you that it's hypocrisy of the greatest kind, because some will say that the Pope is throwing stones from a glass house, in that gold palace called the Vatican was not built by the poor, it was built by the rich. And the great art that we have come to associate with the church was art that was commissioned by the rich, not by the poor. Secondly, by attacking bonuses, which all corporations give out to productive workers in order to encourage them to keep being productive, I'll ask you, the self-righteous amongst the listeners of the Savage Nation, if you were given a bonus, what would you do with it? Would you run to your nearest church and put it in the poor box? Or would you say, I have a poor family member who's having financial difficulties, let me help her? Or would you set it aside for your children's future college tuition? Or would you put it aside for your future medical costs, which are going to be astronomical? Corporations give out bonuses based on the income that the individuals bring to the company. Not all employees are equal in a corporation. Those who bring big profits get big bonuses, Mr. Pope. And those who bring nothing to the company get very, very small bonuses. They get what they deserve, in other words. That's the way the world works. That's how you encourage people to keep taking risks and to also get off their behinds and not sit around playing backgammon in Cuba. Now, see, this is the question. It's not what the Pope is saying. It's how he's become the Pope. Why? They had other choices. So who is it in the church that decided to go by the way of liberation theology? And why all of a sudden? That's a thesis for, not for radio. That's a thesis for a PhD candidate or a professor of theology somewhere. Not for me. It's not beyond my pay scale, I mean, but it's just not something I will do right now. By the way, since we're talking about theology for a moment, can I digress? And I'm going to take, as you can see, I'm bubbling over with enthusiasm because it's a very important issue to me. Yesterday, I took a breather. I needed a day off from radio. I do this every so often. And I said to myself, Michael, you know, you define yourself by what you do on your day off as much as by what you do on your day on. So instead of falling into the normal patterns of what I normally do, which is the ordinary, just to relax, I went to the Palace of the Legion of Honor Museum, not to talk about it on the radio. I said, okay, you enjoy art, you enjoy Rodin, you enjoy some of the paintings. So I went up there, and it's amazingly uplifting, and it lifted me back up to certain levels of my own thinking, my own mind. But I stumbled upon something I had not seen in the museum, and that was this. There's a room I stumbled into that no one goes into of medieval art, 1500s, and they were tapestries, a whole room of great tapestries, which were the signature art of that period. And I looked at it, and I read the little placard next to the tapestries, and it was all religious art, as you well know, in the Middle Ages. And I read that the three theological virtues are faith, hope, and charity. I said, wow, didn't know that. I mean, I didn't know that they were called the theological virtues. I knew that faith, hope, and charity were virtues, right? But then I read that there are the cardinal virtues, and these are the virtues recognized in the writings of classical antiquity, and by the way, in Christian tradition. And what are they? Prudence. What's prudence?
Justice, we all know what justice is. Temperance or restraint, we kind of know what that is, although we've lost it with this libertine society. And fortitude, which is something that soldiers know. Forbearance, endurance, ability to confront fear, uncertainty, and intimidation. And those are the cardinal virtues, right? And yet, we seem to be living in a time where people not only mock both the theological and cardinal virtues, but embrace the opposites. And I thought, wow, what a world it would be if we could have the theological virtues taught again in the schools. Can you imagine? At a time when judges are ripping down crosses from war memorials, and 1,000 soldiers don't show up with sidearms and say, go ahead and make my day. They just did that in San Diego today. One low-life, minuscule judge, a stinker with a law degree, who was given a rotten, stinking black robe because he bought the judgeship, in my opinion. One little filth who went to law school says, take down the war memorial. Break the cross off the war memorial. Because a group of atheists said to him, it's a separation of church and state. I'd like to see 1,000 soldiers show up with legal sidearms or rifles or shotguns and say, go ahead and make my day. Break down that cross. I dare you. The day that happens is the day this country will turn around. All you need is 1,000 cops off duty, 1,000 military retired, 1,000 people with guts to stand there and say, I dare you to break down that cross, is what I thought to myself when I read that story. Who the hell is this judge? Who are they? Who are these people? Why are we afraid of them? When did the courts become God? I said to myself before I went on the air. But I didn't intend to say that. But I said it anyway. That's the day America will be turned around. 855-400-SAVAGE, the most skeptical show in radio. Mark your calendars. Mark your calendars. January 1st, this show moves to a new location. Same station that I'm on. Probably the same station I'm on. But a new time. On the East Coast, 3 to 6 drive time. On the West Coast, 12 to 3 noontime. And I should tell you that I'm going to be the last man standing in radio. I knew this would happen when I began 20 years ago this March. I predicted I'd be in the winner's circle. I didn't know it would be this big a win. But I am at the winner's table right now. Hannity lost 52 cumulus stations. No matter what Hey Abbott says, no matter what Hey Abbott says, he's not doing better, he's doing worse. Hannity lost 52 cumulus stations. I got them all. It's that simple. And they're the best stations in America. He has substituted a few with a few decent stations, but by and large, he's been knocked down to B-level stations. Yes, he'll have more stations than I will, but it's not all about size. I mean, size may matter to some, and the number of stations may matter to some, but at the end of the day, that's not what really matters. It's the quality, not the size. Ask any, wait, it's a family show, 855-407-282. There are other topics. We're talking about the selfie that Obama took of himself. It's going around. By the way, it's not been swept aside. It's a big story. No matter what they try to do on MSNBC, it's a huge story around the world. They're laughing at the man who made a mockery of the presidency. They saw him for who he is. That's all. You may not believe it, but even the Associated Press has filed a complaint against the White House saying they will not let anyone take a picture of the president. It happened only two or three times that anyone could take a picture of him actually working in his entire administration. Twice. Staged photographs like in the ex-Soviet Union. And this picture, when he let his guard down, was taken not by the press in America, but by a Reuters photographer who caught him doing it. It's a picture that's shot around the world. Now, in the staged photos that came out afterwards about the great president's working habits aboard Air Force One, they showed President Obama, Mrs. Obama, at one of the conference tables on Air Force One, with the four horsewomen of the apocalypse. Three of them we knew. Michelle Obama, Susan Rice, the woman who gave us Benghazi, or try to cover it up. Valerie Jarrett, the real estate speculator and all-around peasant avante from Chicago. And then there was a new player I saw in the picture, someone I'd never seen before, Tina Chen. I said, who is she? What is she doing there? How is she sitting at the table of power like this? Well, I looked into it. Tina Chen is assistant to the president, chief of staff to the first lady. Tina Chen is assistant to the president, chief of staff to the first lady, Michelle Obama. Well, who is she? Well, let's look into it. Let's see. She is, well, whatever. She used to work in litigation at Skadden Arps. That you've got to understand. Previously a partner in corporate litigation at Skadden Arps. Incidentally, you have to ask yourself what she did at Skadden Arps. Did she represent the workers or corporations? She represented public agencies in state and federal class actions before that, meaning she played both sides of the aisle, as most of these corporate lawyers will do. Many of them take jobs as defense, like fending the poor, and then once they do a great job at that, they then go to work for the big corporations, taking the other side. But before working for Skadden Arp, she worked, Mrs. Chen, represented public agencies in state and federal class actions, including, listen to this, Illinois Department of Children and Family Services, the Illinois Department of Public Aid, and the Chicago Housing Authority. You have any idea what I'm saying to you? Ms. Chen is the recipient of many awards, including the Leadership Award from the Women's Bar Association, blah, 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 blah. Tina Chen is a very interesting woman. She certainly is a hard worker. She works around the clock. She's driven, this and that. Tina Chen, age 50, whatever, is the daughter of a psychiatrist born in China. And she succeeded Chief of Staff Susan Scher, who was another Chicago attorney, as is the First Lady. All three are longtime progressive friends. An Ohio native, Miss Chen, T-C-H-E-N, lived in Chicago for 30 years. Before President Barack Obama, better known as the Selfie, tapped her to direct the White House Office of Public Engagement. A longtime Democratic activist, Chen was a partner in corporate litigation at Skadden Arps. She previously served on the boards of the University of Chicago Medical Center, Chicago Public Library, and did pro bono legal work. She was an early Barack Obama supporter and a fundraiser for Obama, dating to the 04 Senate race. Well, you get the picture. You get the picture.
Savage.